Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
The power of story. What is the power of story? In the reading about Trudy and the Gestapo officer, story has the power to reach other people and somehow touch them so they identify with the protagonist of the story, however improbably. Trudy's ability to transform that Gestapo officer from indifference to fascination by making him understand and then identify with her experience as a dwarf may have saved her life. For me, this is a metaphor for the power of story to save. But even more fundamentally, Trudy's story of the man with the heart outside his body is a way of understanding herself. So before I get ahead of myself, I want to look at how we create identity through narrative. We all live according to scripts in our heads in which we are cast as the protagonists of our own stories. We make meaning through these stories of ourselves. We structure and order our world. A story is like a script that tells us who we are, how we fit into the social order, and what that social order is like. Any of these story components may be more or less true. As far as who we are, our identities, by true, I mean they may correspond to the real qualities and potential of a person, not the fears or hostility or destructive worldview of others who may have helped write society's story. Sacred stories also tell us about our identity, and they do much more. They attempt to tell us what is ultimately real and true about the nature of human beings, about how we should live with one another, and about ultimate reality, known to religion as God. All stories, including sacred stories, create order and meaning, but that doesn't mean all stories are true. We are religious liberals, meaning we believe in human reason and our right to follow where our reason and experience take us. And it takes us to a lot of sacred stories. The ones we all know as sacred and others peculiar to UUs that we may not recognize as sacred, but that function that way for us. How do we know which ones are true? I don't think a sacred story is true just because it's lasted a long time, although that is a good clue. The litmus test that I came up with is that a sacred story is true or partly true if it is life-giving, if living by it leads to the growth and flourishing of people, of other living creatures, and of the earth. Does it affirm the dignity and worth of all human beings? Does it uphold the interdependent web of all existence? If it helps us be most fully ourselves and develop our potential, if it supports the cycle of life, which includes death in balance with life, then I consider a story sacred. In saying this, of course, I'm assuming UU values, that human flourishing is good, that life is good, that the earth is good. I can't deny evil, collective or individual, but I do believe that we need one another. And under most conditions, we seek to love one another. That's my sacred story, my faith statement. It is not universally shared. Sacred stories, like all stories, can have many different messages. Some are not true or healthy for human beings. I could think of 100 examples of sacred stories that violate my criteria for truth. That is, that are, I believe, false. To go to an obvious extreme, we have Wahhabi Islam, the ultra-conservative, puritanical form of Islam that is headquartered in Saudi Arabia. Its absolutism, intolerance of majority Islam, much less other religions, and extreme and violent penalties for infractions of religious law have influenced and nourished Islamist terrorist movements. Of course, Islam is not the only major world religion with absolutist, intolerant, puritanical, and punitive purification movements. And we can stay well within the Christian tradition to see examples of destructive sacred stories. I saw one example in a roommate of mine from divinity school. Karen's family story and their sacred story were closely intertwined, and in divinity school, she was working hard to rewrite them both. Karen's father was a conservative Protestant minister, a Dutch Reformed Calvinist who believed that God is a judge above all, and that the deepest fact about being human is original sin. He and Karen's mother were also personally very sheltered, rather afraid of the world beyond the small Dutch Reform Midwestern towns where he served churches. These two tendencies combined in a set of strict rules and general distrust of the unknown. People must be controlled by strict rules or their natural tendency to sin would triumph. As a small child, Karen was terrified of hell and saw herself literally as one of those tiny human beings. If you've ever seen a Hieronymus Bosch painting, those tiny little human beings held by a larger hand dangling them over hell. She actually saw that picture and felt that that was her. As a kid who wanted to rebel against this story by wanting to go to movies or football games, she was seen as willful and wrong. This is the only family I ever heard of in which the kids begged their parents to let them get summer jobs because they were forbidden to. The big bad world was too foreign and dangerous, secular. As the oldest of six children, Karen came head to head with this story, which was her father's story, not hers, and ultimately had to run away from her strict Dutch Reform college in order to burst through the story's boundaries. The story she inherited did not help Karen to develop her skills, talents, or confidence. In divinity school, much later, I well remember, especially at the beginning, she still struggled with writing academic papers because she always felt God judging her intelligence harshly and condemning her to hell. Writing was a traumatic act. She felt her worth as a human being hung in the balance. By the way, you may not be surprised that when Karen eventually finished divinity school and then went on to get a master of social work and became a clinical social worker, her master's thesis was entitled Psychodynamic Aspects of Writing Anxiety. In the many years since, Karen has struggled successfully to create another story that she thinks fits reality better. In this story, God is not an executioner, but the ground of her being that carries her through the world. Her father was not God or the devil, but a flawed human being who was sometimes childish and defensive, and other times loving, devoted, and even open to growth. Her new story was liberating, not only for herself, but also for her parents. It is good news, a good story, gospel. The word gospel comes from the Old English good or good and spell or tale. A good tale. A tale about what's good. Rewriting her family story and her sacred story was how Karen healed her wounds. Later, I learned from her, in fact, that there is a school of psychotherapy called narrative therapy. It works by separating the person from their problems, so the problems are not part of the person's very identity. By creating that separation and identifying their values, skills, and knowledge, it aims to help people rewrite the story of who they are. We all know people, perhaps ourselves, who took on limiting roles in their family scripts, roles such as obedient daughter or black sheep of the family. Many struggle all their lives to escape the confines of such roles. The psychologist Bruno Bettelheim has described how Hindu medicine uses stories to heal, its own form of narrative therapy. A, quote, psychically disoriented patient is given a fairy tale on which to meditate. The patient is supposed to interpret its meaning for his or her problem and come up with a possible solution. Many stories become culturally shared, as we know, and empower or disempower whole groups of people. Here is the power of story to help create social justice or injustice. The scripts of poor African-American young men concentrated in poor neighborhoods often have no roles for them as educated professionals. School is identified with white people in their story, and youth collaborate in enforcing self-defeating scripts in which excelling in school is seen as white, different from the group, and something to be ridiculed. Poor white people are one of the few groups that it's still somewhat acceptable to ridicule as, quote, white trash or trailer trash. Social scripts have roles with high and low status, winners and losers. These scripts work by shaming certain identities, blaming them for their situation. Shamed group identities are found in every culture. Fighting for social justice includes restoring pride to shamed identities of despised groups. Some time ago, I read Jonathan Kozol's book, Amazing Grace. Some of you may know it. About children of the South Bronx, which I believe remains the poorest congressional district in the nation. The book was first published in 1995, several decades before even this devastated landscape started to become gentrified by New Yorkers desperate for affordable housing. In the book, Kozol tells the story of a Mother's Day, as celebrated in a South Bronx African-American church. There, the preacher told a sacred story from the Hebrew Bible, chosen especially for his congregation on this occasion. It was the story of Hagar, Sarah's servant, who became pregnant by Abraham and had to flee from Sarah into the desert. The church was filled with single mothers, many of whose children had lifespans shortened by asthma, lead poisoning, bullets, or who grew up only to become locked away in prison. Like these mothers, Hagar was lowly, without power, a single mother banished by the mainstream of society. Imagine their emotions as the preacher read from Genesis chapter 21, and I quote, "When the water was gone, Hagar cast the child under one of the bushes. Then she went and sat down opposite him a good way off, for she said, 'Do not let me look on the death of the child.' And as she sat opposite him, she lifted up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the boy. And the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, 'What troubles you, Hagar? Do not be afraid, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Come, lift up the boy, for I will make a great nation of him. God has heard the voice of the boy. Many women in that church wept at the power of this story. It affirmed them and their children as loved and worthy, a healing countermessage to the demonic messages of poverty, patriarchy, segregation, racism. So stories clearly can heal. Think about it. How does Alcoholics Anonymous heal? A large part is through the power of stories, the stories members share at meetings, as well as 12 steps that give alcoholics a new story to understand themselves with. Support groups are similar. I think the healing comes first from sharing the stories, making them conscious, and finding that other people have similar stories. Then once we've identified the story, it becomes possible to imagine a new one. As Unitarian Universalists, we have long been in the business of questioning the sacred stories we've inherited from the Jewish and Christian traditions. In new UU introductory classes, people learn that early Unitarians revised the story that Jesus is God or the only route to God. Instead, our forebears saw Jesus as a great prophet, maybe divine, maybe not, but he was not the only one. The early Universalists looked at the story of predestination, the Calvinist story, that some are saved and some are damned to hell, and we can't do a thing about it. And these Universalists rewrote the story to say that all people are saved. What are our sacred stories today? Sometimes I wonder if those of us who have rejected the traditional sacred stories, and I count myself among these, are really missing something. Or perhaps our more abstract principles and purposes have to stand in for sacred stories. But I don't really believe that. More likely, we have redefined what is sacred and have our own stories about it. For to be human is to make stories. Stories, sacred and secular, carry us through life. They can empower us or disempower us. They can even kill us, and they can save our lives. But the good news, the gospel, is if a story is untrue or life-damaging, we can change it. It may be very hard to do, but it is possible. May it be so.